Hijacked Comedy. That's what's coming up on The Art of Bombing, episode 203.
My friend Dan, he's got a podcast, cause all comics need a podcast, and nobody had a podcast called The Art of Bombing. So Dan went out and bought a tape deck. Who knows why he bought a tape deck? Podcasts don't get played on tape decks, but Dan is from the 80s. So hey there, all you funny jerks, come talk to Dan about your work. Tell him all about your worst times. It's The Art of Bombing.
Welcome to a brand new episode of The Art of Bombing. Dan Bublitz Jr. here with you today. It is Tuesday, May 18th, 2021. I hope your week is off to a good start. I hope everything's been going well since the last time that we checked in here at The Art of Bombing podcast. I've only got a few announcements today, and then we're going to get right to the show. Speaking of the show today, my guest is Sean Jordan from All Fantasy Everything. That's a great podcast if you don't listen to it. This is also his second appearance on this podcast. We talked about that a little bit during the episode. In fact, I am doing on Fridays, as if you were avid listener to this episode or of this podcast, you know that every other Friday I am doing Flashback Friday re-releases. And this particular week will be Sean Jordan as well. It just timed out that way. It was a coincidence, and believe me, I did not do it on purpose. It just worked out that way. So you get to hear the new Sean Jordan today on Tuesday, and then on Friday, you can go back and listen to his original appearance, which was number 6. That was 4 years ago, and we were in the green room of Wacko's Comedy Club, which we talked a little bit about that in this episode as well. So that's what we got coming up today, but before we get to that, let's take care of the housekeeping, shall we? All right, let's do it. Housekeeping. First thing, just want to let everybody know, starting in June, I will be running ads, so I hope you're okay with it. If you're not, you can go get the ad-free episodes at the Patreon at patreon.com/artofbombingpod if you don't want to listen to ads, but want to try to monetize this podcast a little bit. We've been doing it for 4 years, and it doesn't pay for itself, so gotta pay the bills, you know, if you will. So starting in June, there will be ads, so I just wanted to give everybody a heads up about that. The next thing I want to talk about, I've said it in the last couple episodes, but just as another reminder, if you have a bombing story that you would like to share, you can do that by submitting it on our website. You can go to artofbombingpod.com/submitabomb, and you can type out your story, and it might be featured in a newsletter. I might read it on the podcast, or you can call the Bomb Squad hotline and tell it in your own words. Just remember that it only records for 3 minutes, so make sure you keep the story under the 3 minutes. And I may play it on a future episode of the podcast. And I did this because I can't get every comedian on here and have every comedian's great bombing story. So I thought, well, that's a way to get more bombing stories on this podcast that is only once a week. All right. So again, that's the artofbombingpod.com/submitabomb. If you have a great bombing story that you would like to share with the Art of Bombing family and the Art of Bombing community. If you haven't done so already, please give us a 5-star rating and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It definitely helps people discover our podcast. Well, granted, we've been doing this for 4 years. We're a pretty niche subject, material subject, so it always helps to for new listeners to discover our podcast. And one way that they will discover it is if we're causing ruckus on the internet. And by ruckus, I mean people are leaving us nice 5-star ratings and reviews, because that'll help push us up in the search engines and all that jazz. And if you want to support the show financially, you can do so by going to support. You can support me by buying me a beer if you like what I'm doing and all my hard work. And you can do that by going to buymeacoffee.com/dbubcomedy. You can be like Kristen Carnes. Thank you, Kristen. She bought me a beer, and it was delicious. And in fact, just another little side note with this is that Kristen's actually another comic, and she's going to be on a future episode. And no, she didn't have to buy me a beer to get on the podcast. We actually already recorded her episode before she bought said beer. But she'll actually, her episode comes out next week. So cool little, just a little tidbit on that. And finally, the last thing we're going to talk about today is I have a show coming up in Sioux Falls, May 29th. 2021, I think the show, you go to my website to get all the details, that's danbublitz.com for those details. All right, so that's enough of the housekeeping. Let's get into this great episode, this great conversation with my pal, Sean Jordan. Enjoy!
And now, it's time for the stand-up soundbite.
I just got engaged. I'm excited about it. Thank you. Yeah, I'm happy about it. I just got engaged, and it's a fun feeling. And I know what you're thinking. Of course you got engaged. Who doesn't want that perfect combination between a stepdad and a youth pastor? Come on. It's exactly what everyone's looking for. I never understand when somebody, like, whenever somebody's attracted to me, I just don't get it, you know? I'm just not thrilled about the way I look. I'm not thrilled about my body. And I understand we're all sexy, we're all beautiful, we're all perfect in our own way. That's what you say out loud. And then you get naked and you're like, ah, damn it, man. Come on. I did it today in the hotel. I was looking in the mirror like, ah. Shucks, you know? Like, I just wake up and expect it to be dope one day. And it, you know, I don't want to earn it. I just want it to be that way. My body looks exactly like what you think it looks like. Everybody, do me a favor. Do me a solid. Picture me naked. Do it. Everybody, do it. Do it. Do it. You're doing it. Just do it. Whatever popped into your head, that's exactly what I look like. You know, nothing's hanging out, nothing's defined, just like a big unmolded tube of peach-colored clay. Just sitting there. Like, if I took off all my clothes right now and got completely naked, everybody's heart rate would stay exactly the same.
What's going on out in Portland? You guys can do some outdoor shows, or you have been doing some outdoor shows, right?
They're all open. There's like the comedy club's open and everything. I haven't done anything there yet because I just can't do it. But we have, you know, it's nice. We have patios. It's a big patio city, like patio-ass patios.
So, oh, that's nice. That's nice.
Yeah.
Here in Minnesota, we've been able to do comedy and stuff inside, which is, you know, I'm still very selective. I try to play it safe. I got my first vaccination shot last week. So here, you know, end of the month, I'll be hopefully safer. But being out there, I suppose, because it's pretty much nice year round.
Yeah, you can. I mean, you know, you can go outside year round. It's not like, I did one in like February and it was pretty cold, but you know, whatever, we got to do it. So just put some gloves on and a beanie and do some stand up. It was fun. And then like we have some outdoor shows coming up at the end of April that are on like the waterfront on the river. This is forcing people to kind of get creative and do things that they should have been doing the whole time. Like, let's do it outside. It's fun. You know, that's happening. And the more it happens inside, I'm torn. Like, I get people got to work. I get it. I thankfully, for the first time in my whole life, I'm not in a spot where I like absolutely have to do stand up every week to eat dinner, you know?
Yeah.
So I can be a little more selective. And that's why I just, you know, I don't, why this close? We're so close to the end, hopefully. Why go in and wreck it?
Yep. No, I totally get it. I've been, you know, like I said, I've been doing some comedy, but I've been trying to do it safe myself because it's like, I am trying to make a living off comedy. So, you know,
it's tough.
So it's like, yeah,
that's the part, man.
But I'm right there because you feel you get put in that place where you feel like, oh, I want to make money so I can pay my bills. But also, I don't want to be the guy that's ruining it for everybody, you know?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's, you just have to, like, I got a kid on the way, so I can't bring all that shit back to the crib. But if I was just, like, a single person, I bet I'd be, and I say this, you know, not to create a stink, but I bet I'd be a lot more reckless, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I'd be out safely, but I'd be with the people that now I'm looking at driving by. I'm like, what are you doing? I'd be one of those people sitting at the patio at Tuesday. I would. I know I would. So, and I'm not, take it how you take it, but that's, so I get it. People are, you got to live.
Yeah. Yep. No, for sure. Yeah. So this is your second time on the podcast. You're a returning guest.
My man.
Yeah.
Where, now, remind me, did we do this? Did we do it in your basement?
No, like, we did it in the green room of Wacko's Comedy Club before you performed there.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. By, I don't, okay. Yep. Man, that place.
Yeah.
Didn't. I think about the history of comedy clubs in Sioux Falls, and it drives me bonkers. I just wish the city would decide to, like, okay, we're going to support this comedy club. Mm-hmm. Eastway Bowl has been there for, like, 60 years. It's a bowling alley,
yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Support a comedy club the same way. It just, it kills me that, whatever. Yeah, I remember.
No, I totally. It's crazy because, and you know the history more than I do because you've been doing comedy longer than I have. And, you know, I remember. What's that?
I also now have the Nitwits sign.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Amazing people in Sioux Falls. Sweetheart.
Yeah. And I'll say, yeah, I went to Nitwits before I did comedy. I seen a couple shows there. And then, you know, then when I started comedy, it was way, way, way past them where I jumped into things. But it is, it's crazy. Because when you think about, like, comedy history and, like, different areas, the comedy clubs in Sioux Falls, there shouldn't be that many.
There have been, you know, I lose track, but there's been at least 10 in the last 15 years.
Yeah.
If you count everything. Coconut Joe's, Stephanie's, all the Nitwits, Wacko's, Funny Bone. There's been so many.
Yeah, just since I started doing comedy, there was like 5. Because it was, Fat Daddy's was there. Then it was
Fat Daddy's, I forgot. Yeah,
Rookies.
There's been so many. Every one of them, except for Fat Daddy, she can kick rocks. She's such a bummer. But every other club should have been fine. They should have been just fine. They should have had the clientele. There's the market.
Yep.
But people just won't. They just won't go. And I don't know.
Unless it's a big, well-known name. That's unfortunate. Unless it's a household name.
Yeah, they'll go. Yep. But it's like, and I think, and I don't know if this is even what we're talking about, but this is my, if you're a comedy club, you have to build your reputation on it. The comedy has to be good. And unfortunately, there were a lot of bad comics that got booked because the people that went to those shows were the people that liked that kind of shitty stuff. Like that hacky, whatever, whatever you think is funny, you think is funny. And who am I to judge? But there's, like, if you look at, like, Acme or the, you know, in the cities, they have consistently booked good comedians for 20 years, and now they have people show up even if they haven't heard of the comic because they know it's going good. So
yeah, that's a good point. I mean, they even have, you know, pre-COVID, and even now that they, when they open back up, their open mics even had a big draw for people, you know, like at Acme. Always, yeah. That's like one of the, you know, one of the best open mics because it always has an audience usually. So yeah, that's a good point that they've definitely built a reputation. And and sometimes I wonder with Sioux Falls, I know granted they have an airport, but it is a lot more expensive to fly in and out of that airport, or can be. So it, you know, sometimes it could be one of them things where it's harder to get some of these people at
Much
a
harder.
Club there because it is more expensive. Not saying that they shouldn't have tried, because obviously, if you, like you said,
I get it, man. There's a whole, I tried for a long time to get, like, because there's Minneapolis and Omaha, and I was like, if you just make a Wednesday night show here or something and get the, but whatever, you know, they're trying, it'll happen eventually.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And that's true.
Well, it's happening. There is a comedy club. There is a good comedy club in town. It's not like it's going to happen eventually. It's just, people need to go.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's a lot of what we were kind of talking about is what could have prevented some of these other clubs from shutting down. But past that.
There was a whole bunch of shit. I remember at one of the clubs at Nitwits, they had a meeting with us because it was me and then Josh and Brian and Rude, essentially, who ran the place. Like, there was a manager and other employees, but we were there every minute it was open. We made it run, you know, mm-hmm. and they had a meeting with us. They were like, so we're losing X amount of dollars on liquor every month. And it was because we would just, Brian and I would drink while we worked. And we were kids. We never realized what that did. And so eventually we were just like, well, we'll just bring our own stuff and we can drink that. And they're like, sure. So, you know, it's not like we were helping keep them in business by doing that. So there's more than just the people not going. It was our fault too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's always a lot of factors go into it, I'm sure. Now, were you, I know, I'm trying to remember, when did you leave for LA? Cause you moved out to LA, right? First, or did you move to Portland first?
Went to Portland. I moved in November of 2009.
Okay, so you moved like a year before I started comedy. Okay.
Yeah, I left right when, I think it was right when Fat Daddy's opened, maybe. I stuck around because I worked there for a while. And I think I stuck around and used it as an excuse to not, because I was real scared to move. Mm-hmm. So I think the new club opening, I was like, oh, I got to stick around and help, even though nobody asked me to, but you know. My mind, I was like, I gotta help. So did that for a while and then moved to Portland. And then LA, like in 2016, I think I moved to. And then back here last year.
Yeah, okay. I was gonna say, yeah, because I didn't actually meet you in as far as in comedy goes until after I'd been doing comedy for a while. Because, yeah, like I said,
yeah,
I don't know, I was just back moved.
Home, back home doing the club, right? And then we just met doing that way?
Yeah, yep. I think, well, actually, we met... I drove you to Brookings for a gig and then opened for you and Jimmy. I mean, that's really right. How we met.
That's right. What was the show? That's right.
It was some restaurant, some restaurant in Brookings, some cafe thing. I forget the name of it, but I think
it's funny how those
Bobby Benedict set it up.
Yeah. That's funny how all those things just kind of fall into the same. You know, like I bet I've done 200 of those and 200-300 and they all, I can't remember specifically any one of them, but like, if you took me into the building, I'd be like, oh yeah, this and this and this.
Yeah. I remember being here.
All together.
Yeah. No, that was a fun show. For sure. And well, now I don't know if you heard, but now they've got a comedy room in Brookings at a brewery.
No. I can't wait to get started, get going again.
Yeah.
I won't dwell on what I wish, but I'm excited to get back into all these rooms.
Yeah. It should be good. Yeah. They just started a few months ago. They're doing like a monthly comedy show there now. So,
awesome.
So it's good to see. I mean, comedy's definitely opening back up and there's more things popping up in South Dakota, which is great. As long as people go support, that's the lesson here. If you live in South Dakota, go support them comedy venues.
I feel like you have more luck with a one-nighter. That was because Nitwits and the Funny Bone, they did like Wednesday, Thursday, two on Friday, two on Saturday, and maybe one on Sunday sometimes. So that's hard to support.
Yes.
If you have like a one-nighter or a two-nighter with one show a night, I think it's sustainable, but then you have to pay a lot less. So it's tricky.
Yeah. And that's what Bosses is doing right now is they just do one show. They're just doing one show a week. You know, and I don't even think they're running every week. I think it, you know, just kind of depends.
Right.
I think they're trying to go every week, but they're just doing one show. And then they'll do like, sometimes they'll do another night during the week at the club, but it's usually like a local thing, you know, local showcase or something like that.
Sure. And if it's like the middle of July, nobody's going to go. But if it's like early fall when it's getting dark early, but it's not shitty out yet, then you could have like four shows a week. It's just kind of figuring out what you can.
Yeah. That's definitely something too. You see more in the Midwest than you do like in the coastal areas or big metropolis, you know, areas where, and a lot of places run seasonal too. Like there, you know, I remember a lot of clubs being seasonal where they didn't open up until it was winter. You know, they ran ran through winter and then summer they closed, which I get because out here people go out. And do
I didn't want to go to stand up. I remember like we'd have a bar, you know, Saturday we'd go skate, we'd have a barbecue. Everyone would like start having beers and I'd be like, oh, I got to go do stand up. And they're like, no one's going to be there. And nobody, you know, I didn't want to go. So I get it. It's when you have a place that's nice half the year and shitty half the year, people really want to enjoy the nice weather. Mm-hmm. LA, it's nice all the time. So they don't care. They're like, sure, I'll go sit in the improv.
Yep.
What do I care? It's beautiful today. It's going to be beautiful tomorrow.
Nope. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well,
that's a pretty lovely.
Yeah, getting into this now, back to the art of bombing. It's been close to 4 years since you were on the podcast, believe it or not. That's how long this has been going. So I'm sure
I hope I'm not going to tell the same story. I didn't even think about that. Do you know what I did last time? What did I tell?
If I remember correctly, and I didn't go back and listen to it yet because I should have. Maybe I should have did that.
I didn't even think about it.
Whatever, I think you did. The story you told on that one was like a corporate gig that you got for, I don't know, some kind of a party. And you way before you were ready. I can't remember all the details.
I bet I didn't. It was the one where I didn't have a microphone and I had to be clean and I didn't have any clean jokes. And it was like 45 minutes and I probably had 5 minutes of material.
Yep. That's.
Those are so. What the hell? It's crazy. I got another one. I'll do one
out here. Yeah. Well, go ahead and tell the story.
So the one. That I, and it's funny, I had a few others, but I just thought of this, so I don't know how, but I think it's talking about all those little road gigs that people always say you have to be able to do those horrible gigs. And I don't think you should have to be able to do them. I think if you can, great. But the more that I do stand up, the more I realize like you don't. Being able to perform in front of like 40 people who absolutely don't want you there isn't necessarily a skill that you need in the quiver. It's nice to have, but you do those because it's experience and you're broke and like, you know, it's just the next step in the ladder. But I'm happy that I don't have to do these a ton anymore. And this one there's two that I just thought of. This other one, I don't think I talked about the other one. I know I didn't do this one. So we were in Eugene and it was one of those shows where Eugene, Oregon, which is like 3 hours south of Portland. And it's one of those shows where nobody in the place knows it's going to happen until it just starts. You know, those
mm-hmm.
where you're just like, and now when I see that happening, I'd get very upset with the person who booked it and I speak up. But back then I was like, oh, I'm lucky to be doing this. So there was like a pool tournament happening and there was a Ducks game going on, and what they did is they stopped the game at halftime. So everybody was there to watch this game. And I think a pool tournament was taking place because of the game. Like people were just there like shooting pool. Cause they don't want to watch, they want to watch the end of the game. And so halftime comes and they shut all the TVs off and they're like, all right, we're going to do stand up now. And everyone's like, are you fucking kidding me? So everybody except for like 7 people got up and left in a huff. They were furious. And I get it. I would be too. If I was watching like a playoff game, I'm in the town where the team is. I'm watching a playoff game and they shut it off to do stand up that I didn't know was going to happen at a bar. I'd be upset too as a comedian. So they turn it off and I'm sitting in the back like, fuck this. So everybody leaves. There's like 7 people that stay. And then there's a group of upset gentlemen who keep playing pool. And I look back and I'm like, maybe they stuck around thinking they were going to get to do something about it. Maybe they stuck around for a reason. But so that was happening. They start the show. I was going on last and I went outside and I was smoking and I was like, this is just so stupid. And I wasn't supposed to be up for like 20 minutes. The dude before me he'd just started his set. And all I hear is he is standing up there and he's like, you know what? Fuck this. Fuck you guys. And I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And then he like stormed off stage and left me to pick up the pieces. Then, so the booker, I think the booker got up and he was like, hey, you know, sorry, we're going to bring your headliner up. And 20 minutes early, by the way, so I had like an hour to do now. And then these dudes that were playing pool were like, now they were very upset because the guy before me had just told them to fuck off and called them losers, I think, like all the stuff.
Oh, jeez.
All that stuff that you do when you're frustrated. And then I got up and I was just like, everybody was mad. And so I was like, I understand. Everybody's upset. I get it. You should be. But I'm going to stand up here and do my job. And I guarantee you, I will be passable. I was like, you might not think I'm hilarious, but I know I'm good at what I do. If you give me a shot, if I can get you to laugh at a joke, then give me like a half hour. And then I told, there were these two women at the bar that were like being the least, they were the least upset. I told one joke and they chuckled and I looked at the guys playing pool and I was like, come on guys, nobody wants to fight. I understand that dude before me was a bummer to you and he's a friend of mine and I'll definitely talk to him about this afterwards. I told them a joke. They laughed and I was like, if you give me a half hour, we'll all be done. You guys can stick around. We can turn the game back. Da, da, da. So I did my half hour. I got off early because I was upset. And it went as well as it could have gone. But initially, it looked like we were just going to like have a melee. And mm-hmm. it was so many different levels of irresponsible for booking a show. Now that like I've booked shows, you've booked plenty of shows.
Those
things that you look at when you're booking a show, it's the person who was booking it didn't do any of them. None of them. And so I think what happened is they knew there was going to be a playoff game, so there would be people in the bar. And in their mind, they were just going to take advantage of that and figured the people were morons and they would just stick around regardless. So they were going to shut the game off and be like, cool, we got a built-in crowd. And that's not what happened at all.
Yeah, that's definitely something as a booker, that's where you bomb as a booker. Because if you think that way, you're in trouble. Because anybody that's done comedy in a sports bar knows it's the worst to be trying to do comedy when there's a sports game going on, doesn't matter what sport it is, and especially if it's some sort of championship or playoff or anything, and then if you add that it's a local team, that's even like it just keeps stacking.
College is down the street. And it's funny too because you're at a sports bar, so there should be sports on the TV. That's like if someone came into a comedy club and stopped the stand-up show and was like, "We're gonna watch football."
Yeah.
And everybody'd be like, what? Because I love sports, some more than others. So I'm never going to be one to clown on someone. I will say that if your textbook, some sort of sports fan, can be much more aggressive and it's you don't want to poke that bear if you can help it, which some people don't seem to give a fuck about. That's another thing about doing those shows is there's like testosterone flying around a sports bar. There just is. There always is. It's like drunk dudes and, you know, it just is how it is. So
yeah, no, absolutely.
You got to be prepared for that energy. And when people aren't, or they think a lot of these kids too, they've never like, they think there's something stopping the crowd from them. And some of the shit that comes out of their mouth, I'm like, they can come up here. This place has fights every night, I would bet you. And this is a night, you know? So nothing's stopping that dude from coming up here and smacking you. But
right? You're like, there's one security guard, and he's at the door checking IDs.
Probably doesn't care at all about what's happening.
Yeah, exactly.
The whole thing was off, and I knew it from jump. Like, when you pull up and you're like, you can just tell.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then you walk in. Everyone's looking at you because they know. They're like, this kid, I've never seen this guy. I'm kind of dressed up, not really, but like I look presentable and they're like, what's going on? Who is that? And they, you know, you can just tell. You can tell.
Yep. Yep. Those are the shows I refer to as hijacked comedy.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Where the comedy show hijacks the bar.
I've left a few too. I remember we were at Helium in Portland. And we went to this bar called High Dive, which is right by there. It's where we always went. And they just started doing an open mic in the bar. And I was like, no, I'm not going to stick around and watch this. This is ridiculous. And I left as a comedian. I was like, you guys are crazy. Nobody said anything. I didn't want to be around comedy. I wanted to have some drinks with my friends after the show that we just did at the club. It's funny. Definitely something you do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've even produced, when I was in San Diego, I had an open mic at a bar. So I know exactly about hijack comedy because that's how some people would feel. But it wasn't like it was a random thing. Like, we did this every Thursday. There were flyers up at the bar, like, you know, like.
Yeah.
People knew that there was going to be comedy, but there was always nights when there were people that would come in that had no clue there was comedy. They were just waiting for karaoke because that's, you know, karaoke would be after the show or whatever. And, you know, or they were there to watch something on, you know, a sports game or whatever. But
well, and another acquired skill is if you're doing those shows, you learn eventually to not get upset with the people who are talking or not listening because it's okay. You know, if there's people up around you listening and whatever, you can handle it, you know?
Yep. And that's a good point. 'Cause you see that a lot too with comedians where they'll get mad. They get mad because somebody is sitting at the bar with their back to them and not paying attention. And there's no point. You forget they didn't come there to see you or listen to comedy. This is just where they go to have a drink. This is their local watering hole, and you're ruining their experience. So
absolutely, you're ruining.
You're better off ignoring them because all you're gonna do, like you said, you're just poking the bear.
Yeah.
definitely nothing stopping them from coming up, except maybe your bar stool. You know, you can. Fend them off like a lion.
But yeah, it's, and honestly, if you do just embrace it, these kinds of shows, if you just say like, all right, here's what I'm gonna do, and you just do your act and you do what you should do and you're cool, you put good energy out, 9 out of 10 those people are gonna like turn around and enjoy it a little bit, or they'll at least stop talking so loud or whatever. I mean, you know, if you're good at something, then people take notice. Like, if someone just walked into a bar juggling, I wouldn't care. But if they were doing it for 20 minutes, I'd be like, look at that. They're still juggling. That's crazy. They're a really good juggler.
Yep. Yeah. That's actually when I, you know, go into like different open mics and stuff, I would love going to music open mics or mixed mics because of that. Because, you know, people would go to these mics to listen to music where they didn't have to be that invested. And as a comedian, if I could go up there and draw them in to pay attention, then it was like, okay, I definitely got something here with these jokes, or I'm definitely doing, you know, something, because I was able to get their attention and draw them into this show. And it's kind of the same thing there with, you know, going into those situations.
That was another one. When I first moved here, I didn't know any open mics or anything. So I just called around to bars and asked if they, and this place, the Hawthorne Theater, they were like, yeah, we have an open mic. And I would go, is it stand-up? And they said, yes, for sure, it's stand-up. And I got there, and it was not stand-up. It was music, all of it. I was the only comedian. And so they had all these musicians, and then they go, next, we're going to have the comedian. And then they didn't say my name or anything. And then I just came up, and everyone was like, they were quiet, but they were like, what are you going to do? You're fucking up our, this, you know, our music night. And I did terrible. It was another one of those. You just gotta do it.
I love it when you can always tell that if a open mic or a show doesn't really ever have comics or comedians on it, because the host, that's how they'll bring them up. I'm like, I guess we're gonna have a comedian, or it's time for some comedy.
It's so stupid. Where you're just like, what if I had a guitar and I was gonna come play a song, how would you bring me up? They would say, next we have Jason Stevens, he's been playing around here for a while. We love seeing him here. We're excited to see what he's got. Everybody, welcome Jason. Come on up. But when they'd be like, and the comedian? And they don't say your name? What the fuck's the world do you? What planet are you on? Say my name. Don't be.
Yeah. You know. Yeah, exactly. At least throw the name out there. You said there was another show you were going to talk about, too. What was that one?
Well, it reminded me because I was thinking of pool. So we were in. I was on tour with Timmy Williams. I hope I didn't talk about this. I don't think so.
I don't think you did, actually.
It was me and Timmy and this kid, David Van Eisen, who's another South Dakota guy, and Dax Jordan, who's a Portland guy. But I don't know. Just we all decided to take a tour through the Midwest. And we stopped all the shows were okay. They weren't, you know, it was just fun. It was only it was the first tour I'd been on. So I was like, yeah, totally. And we got to Lincoln and we went to the bar that we were supposed to have the show at. And we went in the back and it was pool night. And there were these like pretty gnarly looking, just Lincoln shit kicker cowboy dudes. And I say that because I know that they were dickheads and I wouldn't just call them. They sucked and you'll find out. So where I look, there's a stage and the pool table in this room. And then there's like some chairs on the wall. And we start setting chairs up because we were just setting up for the show. And they were like, they asked what we were doing. We said we were doing a stand-up show. They said that nobody had said anything about it. It was their pool league night. And I was like, okay, I understand. Immediately, I was like, okay, so this is touchy. I don't want to be aggressive and say, you know, fuck your pool league, like a lot of people would say, because, again, it's not their fault. So I went and asked the bartender about it. And the bartender's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. They didn't know there was a show going on. So we tried to call the owner of the bar, and it took us like 2 hours to get a hold of the owner of the bar. And he was out of town, and he's like, oh, yeah, I forgot. He forgot to say anything to anyone. So nobody had sold any tickets. Nobody had told anyone anything about it. But Timmy, who was on the Whitest Kids, you know, he had some people coming out specifically to see him. So there were like 15 people there to see the show. There was enough people who had already bought tickets to where we can't just say we're not going to do the show. Out of principle, it was like, we're going to do it. So I'm outside smoking, trying to like, I don't know, just trying to figure out what we do. And then these dudes come out. They didn't know I was on the show. I don't think they had seen me set chairs up. They just thought I was some guy. And they start talking. They're like, you see these assholes setting up these chairs? I'll fuck them up immediately. And they just started talking about fighting us. And I could tell that they were serious. It's like, they'll do something. So I go back in and I was talking to Timmy and Dax and David, and I was like, just to let you know, I heard these gentlemen outside, and if we do this stand-up show, it's going to be an issue. And I was like, if we need to do it, then we need to do it. I'm right here. I've been around the block a couple times. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen. Whatever. They suck. I can tell they suck. So, you know, we'll see. So we ultimately decide not to do it. And Timmy goes, I'm just going to walk and see if we can find a bar that wants some stand-up. And so he's walking on the street in Lincoln, and some dude at a bar just happens to be like the busiest bar in town. It's dollar PBR night. And the door guy is like, are you Timmy Williams from the Whitest Kids You Know? And he goes, I sure am. We're looking for a place to do a stand-up show. And the guy's like, you can do it here. This is my bar. And they paid it. They're like, we'll pay each like $100, which is 80 more than we were going to get each. And then they're like, we got a stage, we have a sound system. So they went up on stage and they told everyone, like, we're going to have a stand-up show with Timmy Williams from the Whitest Kids. And it just, like, most of the place knew who he was, so they all freaked out. And then we started the show and the PA blew. So that was the only bummer, is we had to scream the whole show. But it was fine. We just yelled, did our sets, and it ended up being fantastic. But it's another one of those that could have been.
Wow.
It was so close to being, like, a real nasty bummer. And then it ended up being like the best, one of the best shows I've ever done.
That's amazing. What a save.
That's fun, man. Dollar beer night. It was one of those where you're like, God, we are in a college town, aren't we?
Yeah.
Dollar beer.
Right. Yeah. There's actually, in my hometown, they do dollar, grain belts actually at a bar in my hometown.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, oh man, this is heaven. Cause I love grain belt.
we used to have like, what was it, like $2 you call it or something, where anything was $2, anything at all. So you could be like, give me a glass of tequila and it would be $2, or give me a Budweiser and it was $2.
Sounds dangerous.
It was very dangerous.
No, very, but that's an amazing story, because what a save. Talk about, I love that too. Like, Timmy is the kind of person that would do that too. Like, not because he was known, but even if he wasn't, I just feel like he'd be that guy that he's like, well, if we can't do it here, I'll just go walk around until I find a place that'll let me perform.
That's how he got to be who he is he's got that personality. He's just infectious and great, and people love him. And then that's probably what happened. And because I was ready to be like, I'll just eat this $60 or whatever. I don't want to fight tonight. I'd rather just go to a different bar, have a couple drinks, and be like, oh, we don't get to do a show
tonight. So, yeah, we take a day off.
Yeah, it worked. worked out as well as it could have possibly gone. It was the best solution for what could have been. But it's that thing where it's like the owner of the bar didn't tell anyone what was happening. And that's just, it was like a lot, 10 years ago, but you had email and you could text and stuff. It's like, there's no reason that shouldn't have happened. He was out of town, didn't answer his phone for a couple hours. It's like, I'm sure that bar is out of business.
That happens more often than not too with comedy. It seems like where they just forget that they're having a comedy show.
And I've had people ask, bar owners, they'll ask you, or venue owners, they'll approach you and ask if you want to do it, and then it comes around to the day of, and they're like, "Oh shit, man, I forgot," or they've double booked it or something, and you're like, "Oh, that's because then it makes you look so bad."
Yeah, and then you have to worry about, especially if you get to the venue, and because now it's like, well, who's paying me? Because I'm here, you know.
That's a whole other thing. I've had people try to give you less than they said, or like, they're like, well, here's a cut of the door, and you're like, I didn't agree to the cut of it. It's not my fault. Four people showed up. You told me you're gonna give me, and it's never like an exorbitant amount of money. It's $200.
Yeah.
And like, as a grown up, I've been as broke as you can be, and so I get it. Sometimes you don't have $200, but if I owned a business, I think I'd have an extra $200 sitting around to be like, all right, here's your money. I will figure out on my end how I'm gonna make up for that. Not, well, fuck you, here's $8 because nobody showed up.
Yeah, like, because I didn't tell anybody that we were doing this show.
It is always so. It never gets old to me, those stories. It's always just like, what?
Yeah, just like, this is insane. This is insane. Now I've got some standard questions I like to ask my guests, too. Like I said, I'm a little more formal than I was the last time we did this. The bumming of bombing, the dreadful feeling you get when you have a bad show or when you felt like you bomb. How does that typically affect you, and how long does it last? But how, more importantly, how has that changed over the years, the more you've done stand-up?
It's, well, I used to, and I'm sure I said, I used to go pout. I used to, like, I would sit... And I remember I'd sit in the hallway at Nitwits. If I had a bad set, I would sit with my butt on the ground and my knees kind of at my chest and my arms around my knees, just like a little kid would sit if they were pouting. I'd sit in the hallway, and I was growing. I was 25. So I would do that. And A, because I was so pissed off, I just didn't know what to do. And it was such a new feeling of being that upset. But another part of it is I did want people to see me and tell me I did a good job so I could tell them. So I could be salty about it, be like, fuck, I did not shut up, shit like that. It's embarrassing to say. It's very embarrassing because I was an adult. But then you get used to it a little bit. You start bombing less, but you're never done. You're always going to have a bad set. And now it outwardly, I'm fine, because now if I do bad, I can say with like pretty confidently that it's not all my fault, because there is a formula, and if I get up and do my job that I know works, I know these jokes in the setting that a joke works. Like if it's a dark room and there's a bunch of people packed in and they want to be entertained, these work. They will entertain. They are funny in that way. I can't just tell them to someone at dinner and have it be funny. So if I have a bad set now, I'm like, well, all right, maybe it's a little bit of both, my fault and their fault. If I have a bad set because it's all me, if I was hungover, or I'm just not trying, then I'm mad at myself until I have another good set. So kind of depends on why I did poorly. Mm-hmm. If it was my fault, then I'm mad at myself. You know, just like if you sleep through your alarm because you were drunk or something, it's your fault. You're mad at yourself. So yeah, if I do poorly and it's my fault and I know it's my fault, then I'm very upset with myself until the next time I do stand up, and then I make sure I get it done the next time. Like I am on point. Like I make sure I go over my notes and stuff like that. But it doesn't ruin me like it used to. It used to just like every second. Like if I did bad, I would be mad at everything until I got to go up and do well again. And now I'm just like, well, it's not worth it to get that upset. You just have to be aware that you need to do better next time. So if you're aware of that, being upset at everyone for 2 days isn't going to help. So,
yeah, you know. That's for sure. And you kind of touched a little bit on it, what you you talking about, you know, looking at notes and stuff for next time. But another question I like to ask is, how do you analyze a set that doesn't go well to figure out kind of what happened and try to prevent that or improve the next performance?
I record most of them, but if I'm being honest, I don't ever listen or watch it.
I'm the same.
So I've been trying to work on that more. I just watched the set I did the other day. I watched the whole thing and it was very painful, but I was like, watch, just do it. Who cares? And so sometimes I will listen or watch, but a lot of times I'll just try to remember what I did. And for me, a lot of when I do bad is I get nervous if one thing goes wrong, and then it's like a domino where I'll start stuttering. I'll say words I don't normally say. I'll do little movements I don't normally move. And then I can tell I'm doing that in my head while I'm on stage, and that makes me more nervous. So I really just work on trying to be as much myself on stage as I can. Like I want someone, if they watch me do stand-up, I want that to feel almost exactly the same as if I were just talking to them or if we were having lunch. Everyone, I think, is like a heightened version of themselves on stage, but I don't want to be different. I want to sound like this, but I just want it to be funny. And I want my words to be funny and my points to be funny. And if I don't do that, then I get I'm mad at myself. So that's what I try to work on. If I do poorly, I focus on the little things, why I did poorly. Because a lot of times it's not like, you know, if you're a comedian, you kind of know, you're like, this is a funny premise. It should be a funny joke. Do it right. So just for me, it's just figuring out how to do it right. And if I do bad, it means I did it wrong. So I just take those little things because ultimately that's what makes me feel better about myself and more confident. And then the joke is going to come across better, delivered better, more confidence, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And then when you're on stage and say, you know, a joke doesn't land like, you know, it's supposed to, or you feel like you're starting to lose the audience, you know, maybe you're starting to bomb. What goes through your mind when that's starting to happen?
Yeah, well, because I hope I didn't sound like a prick. Sometimes they just don't work. Like sometimes, you know, sometimes they're just not funny jokes. People who are there, they don't like them. I have a couple that really have always worked. Since I got them down, there's a couple jokes where I'm like, that always works. So I always try to keep a couple of those in the chamber, in the back of my head. And then if I know how much time I have left, it can get scary. Like I did this corporate for Home Depot where it was so, I'll spare you the details, but it was just horrible setup. And I was doing my first like 3-4 minutes of a 45 minute set, and they weren't even smiling. It was just like, I was doing it to a bunch of like people who were being possessed. Like they were in the middle of a body transformation. They weren't talking. They weren't laughing. They weren't booing. They were just like bored children.
They were trapped.
So, yeah, that was that thing. And I got nervous right away. And I was like, well, what are you going to, you go over the options in your head. You're like, what are you going to do? You're going to leave. You're not going to leave. You're going to do your set. So just do it. And then as soon as you reconcile, by the way, they can see none of this. That's the funny part, is the crowd has no idea that you're thinking all these thoughts. You reconcile with the fact that you're going to be up there for 40 more minutes. They're probably not going to like it. You just do your shit. And then, you know, a couple people came around. Most of them didn't. And then I left. And most of the people told me I did a good job. So, you know, who's to say when you're doing bad, when you're not? So I really just try to be like, you know, if I'm at my call center job that I've had numerous times, I'm doing bad the whole time. It's like having a bad set, and you just deal with it. You just do it, you know, like do your job, have jokes prepared. It's nice. The longer you do it, you can have more material to cover different things. If you're that kind of person, you can do crowd work. If you think you're going to do all right, it's always risky, but you know, there's a couple different things you can do to bail yourself out.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know about you. Crowd work's not one that I'm very good at.
I don't like it.
I'm not a fan.
If I have to, but no, I'm not one of those people that's like, hey, what's up? I'm Sean. What do you do, sir?
Yep.
If like, if people are talking or heckling or whatever, I'll definitely address it in a very nice way. I don't like being rude or mean because I always try to give people the benefit of the doubt. If you're talking or heckling, you're either drunk, which, hey, I've been there, just as drunk as whoever I'm talking to, I guarantee it. Or like you honestly think you're part of the show or you're helping, or you're just a dipshit. But either way, it's like it doesn't make you a bad person. So I always address it. I try to quiet it with being like, cool, you got to be quiet, you know? And then if they're not, then I'll be a dick. I'll say something mean. Usually that works. And then I'll apologize. And then, you know, because you don't want the crowd to turn on you either. So it's like, it's a very, you have to handle it with a lot of nuance if you're going to do crowd work. I don't like the people that just get up and make fun of people. To me, it's so easy to make fun of someone for anything that, it, I just look at it like, fuck you. You know, people make fun of someone's shirt or like there's if they got sandals on or whatever. And you're like, dude, anyone could pick you apart if they wanted to, you know, it's very frustrating because then to me, it shows a lack of material, lack of confidence in yourself. So I don't like to make fun of people at all. And crowd work, it seems like that's essentially what it is making fun of people. Unless you're like Jimmy Pardo or something who finds a way to not make fun of people. Like one of my favorite things he'll do is he'll like, where'd you go to lunch today? And whatever they say, he'll be like, yeah, what'd you get there? You get a sandwich? And it's just hilarious. It's funny crowd work, you know? Mm-hmm. So that stuff I love, but I just don't like to make fun of people. So I try to avoid that.
Yeah. So what you're saying is you're not really a roast guy. You're not going to be doing the roast battles.
if I'm friends with someone, my friend Kyle had a show called The Roast Rattle where you just say nice things and trout, you say, it's like a roast, but you say nice things yep. and make them sound like they're mean. Like, you know, like Dan's dick is so big that my girlfriend asked for like pics of him, you know, stuff like that. Where you're stuff they're like boasting people, but still roasting.
Yep.
I like those. But
yeah, that's no, fun. Yeah, it's definitely. I lean more that way too. In fact, somebody actually they asked me if I would do their roast for a birthday roast, and I told them no. I was like, I'm just not mean. I don't like being mean. I feel like when it comes to roasting, like and to be a good like to write good roast jokes, even if you know the person or not, they you still have to have that ability to be really mean, and I'm just not.
Yeah, it's tough. I would not saying I wouldn't do it for Comedy Central money. If someone's like, you want to roast Charlie Sheen, I'd be like, I sure do. If you're going to give me 50 grand, then yeah, I do.
But yeah, well, no, this was not general, Comedy Central, so.
Yeah. In general, I like that jokes, they do to be the part that people are there for, not to see some poor schmuck in the front row get shit on by like, by the way, by like four professionals in a row. That's what always bothered me too. It's like that person just showed up, they paid money or they won tickets or whatever. They were brave enough to sit up front. Most of the time they're not doing anything wrong. They're just like taking a bite of a burger and you're just like, whoa, big bite, loser. And everyone laughs at them. And then you're like, now they're scared to eat their food and they're going to be like turtle up the whole time. I don't know.
Yep. And the next time, if they come to another comedy show, they'll never sit up front again.
No, and that's why when I used to have to seat people, it'd be such a battle. It's like getting a kid to brush their teeth. It's like, all right, you guys are up front. And they're like, no, we don't want to be up front. And then you have to stick up for the comic. And you're like, oh, they won't. They're cool. And in your mind, you're like, they're probably not cool. They're probably going to make fun of you. Sorry, but, you know. And then, yeah. And also, I don't want to sit up there. I've sat in the front row of a stand-up show. And it sucks. I don't like doing it.
Yeah, so I'm right there with you.
You're just staring up, like, right at them, and you feel obligated to laugh, even if something's not funny and you can't be comfortable. And I don't even mind. Here you go. I don't mind people checking their phones during stand-up. I mind if they're on their phone, but I don't mind if they check their phone. And as long as I can tell that they're just looking at it for a second, I don't care. If they're texting back, I kind of care. Mm-hmm. But if it's quick, I don't. It's just kind of where we're at in life. So I've never really talked about that. How do you feel about that? I've never actually talked about this before.
Honestly, I guess, I mean, it depends on the situation kind of, but I've gotten so used to, because I come up like you know, doing shows, these one-nighters in bars and things like that. So, like, you're used to the crowd doing whatever they want because they're probably not there for comedy anyway. So it's kind of like you can't get mad at them for doing their own thing, you know?
Right.
So it's kind of the same. I mean, I think when they're, for me, if they're right up front and they're making it obvious, that's where it does get kind of annoying, you know, where you can tell that they're like, okay, I don't like you, so now I'm just going to sit on my phone.
Exactly. And it's that is infuriating, but if they're just checking it, I don't mind. That's, I know it's little to do about anything, but it's like kind of where we're at now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm never one of those people when someone pulls their phone out, I'm like, put your fucking phone away. I've asked people what they're, there's some crowd work I'll do. Like if I see someone texting, I'll be like, who are you texting? What's going on? Never in a mean way, but I'm just like, let's talk about it a little bit. That way you don't have to feel embarrassed that you're texting. You can keep doing it. I can riff on it a little bit while you're doing it. You can get done doing it. And then we can keep going with the show.
Yep. Nice little.
I've never thought about that.
I was going to say, yeah, it's just kind of a nice little pause to the material. And that way everybody's paying attention and not being distracted. It's a good, that's a good, good tool, good tactic with that when they're on there. But yeah, I don't know. Cause some people, that's the other thing too, with even just comics in general, I feel like they really got to be careful is how, you know, we forget that these people come to see us and they come to a comedy show and then we make it all about us on stage. So many comics do where it's like, oh, you came here to see me do jokes. Why are you doing this? And then they get mad. And then you lose the audience. You lose not just that person, but if you're too mean to that person, you lose the rest of the audience. And then it's just, you know, you just go downhill.
That's a hard hole to dig out of when you've done something to where the room decides that you're a dickhead. It's tough to, I've had that happen a few times. I used to flip out when people would talk, when they'd even say one word, I would freak out, not in a funny way. And, you know, all this be like, why don't you fucking leave, all that stuff. And then you're done with your rant and everyone's looking at you like, dog. And then you're like, no, hey, it's me. And then, you know, so I had to calm myself down a lot with that stuff because it used to, I think just when you're new at anything, you're shy and you're timid and I didn't have any confidence. I didn't think I was any good at it. Thought I was ugly, all this stuff. And then it all, for some reason, you still get up and do stand up and it all manifests itself when somebody makes you feel all of it at once. And that's, to me, when someone was heckling, all those things came out because I'm like, oh, they don't like me. They think I look stupid. They don't think I'm funny. I am stupid. What am I doing? You're not a comic, all that stuff. And then just boils out into like a fuck it, get out of here, you know.
Yep.
That kind of stuff. So I think maybe that's calmed me down quite a bit too.
Almost becomes like an inward downward spiral.
Yeah, it's like I skateboard and I used to get so upset when I couldn't do a trick, and now I just step back and I'm like, oh, it ain't the day. Today is not the day. Freaking out and breaking your skateboard isn't gonna make you do the trick. So chill it out and give it a shot tomorrow.
Yeah, that's all we can do is get back up, keep going. Just kind of going back to the crowd work thing, I just wanted to see what, you know, because you're talking about this a little bit and see what, get your input on this. I always think it's funny, too, because you mentioned the comics that go up there and ask somebody what they do for work. I always think it's so funny when the comics don't pay attention to what's going on and then one comic...
You mean during the show?
Yeah.
Like if they don't watch the comics before them?
Yeah. Yeah, where a comic will go up, they'll see somebody in the front row, ask them what they do for a living, make fun of them or whatever, and then the next comic comes up and does the exact same thing, and then it's not funny because the crowd's like, well, we already know what this person does.
Yeah. Yeah, I had I can't say his name because I think this was an accident, but I did my set, I was opening for someone, and I did a joke, and then I was the MC, and they were the headliner. So I had done my set, there was the feature, and then the headliner, and they got up, and their last joke was exactly, word for word, a joke that I had told. All my, like, I don't think they did it on purpose. Mm-hmm. If they did, it's like, so blatant that I was like, no way, nobody would do that. Nobody would do that. That's so crazy. But they did my joke word for word. down to words that only I say. Not only I say, but like, you know, saying buck and dank and shit like that. Mm-hmm. Nobody says buck or dank. And they're saying stuff in these jokes. And I'm like, I know that what you're doing, but I think it was a subconscious thing. Anyway, it was like that, where the crowd was looking at them like, what? They didn't, they were like dead silence. And the comic was like, nothing, huh? I thought that was a pretty good joke. And they're like, well, we did too, like an hour ago. You know, it was that thing where it's like, I don't think he was watching, or he was watching and it was subconscious. But either way, he said the exact same thing. And I was like, dog, that was a wild move. Wherever that move came from, that was pretty buck. I don't know what you were doing.
Wow, that sounds, yeah, pretty gnarly there.
It was, man.
All right, well, I like to end positively, so we'll just do a couple things. I have a Art of Bombing Get Pumped playlist, so I always ask my guests what's a song that gets you pumped, not just for comedy, but just in general, to add to the playlist.
Just like a good mood song?
Yeah.
Well, I don't call it a good mood playlist. It's just my liked songs on Spotify right now. But every time I hear, like, I don't know, sometimes I'll think of a song that I'm like, oh, I love that song, I should put it on this happy list, or just ones that I've added to the list over time. There's one, it's called World Princess Part 2 by Grimes. That song, it's awesome. Grimes is that girl that had a kid with Elon Musk, which is ridiculous. But
okay.
It's such a dope song.
What was the name of it again?
World Princess Part 2, okay, by Grimes. It's real, real poppy, peppy, techno-y. And I've been really feeling like female singers lately, like bands that are all women or fronted by a woman. And I think Grimes, it's just her. And mm-hmm. But yeah, she's so dope. So I went down a big old Grimes hole the other day.
Oh,
sounds
nice.
Gnarly when you
it does when you say it out loud like that. It definitely sounds. Oh, and we always talk about bad shows, so that's another thing I like to kind of towards the end talk about is some good shows. So what's a show that you've done, one of your favorite gigs that you've done so far?
They kind of, unfortunately, the good shows stick out much less than the bad shows, because the bad shows you remember. The good shows, hopefully, the more you do stand-up, the more you're just like, man, these are all great. But mm-hmm. one that I'm thinking of in particular, I went on tour with Kyle Kinane probably four or five years ago. And we had a few really good ones, but we got to do this place in Milwaukee, the Pabst. I think it's the Pabst Hall. But it's one that sticks out because the time before that I had performed in Milwaukee, it was one of the worst shows I've ever done. I broke my foot later that night.
Oh, no.
It was a whole thing. I had to show up to the shows the next day on crutches. And these dudes that own the club are like mob guys. And they were all like doing that. They were like, hey, what'd you do to your foot? Like smacking my foot. And I'm like, it's fucking broke, you moron. And I didn't get paid what I was supposed to and all that. So then I go back with Kyle, and it was like this giant theater and completely full of people. And there were a few people there who were familiar with me just from a podcast and things, but for the most part, they were all there to see Kyle. But that kind of fan base is so supportive that they'll show love to whoever, as long as you're good, you know. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't have been if I wasn't good. They just would have been like polite, you know.
Yeah.
So I just remember thinking, like, man, you can, if you stick it out, and if you want to do stand up because you really like doing it and you really think it's fun and you're not necessarily worried about being famous, because there's barely any famous comedians, you know, like if you just want to do it and make a feasible amount of money and you stick with it, it can happen. And that was one of the first times where I was like, it happened. That's exactly what I wanted to do. I don't want anything insane. I don't want anything crazy. I just want to be able to go do some stand up, have people enjoy it, and I want to make the same that I would if I did, like, if I worked at a gas station or something. Mm-hmm. And that was one of those times where I'm like, hey, you did it. Set. I don't have crazy goals. That was one of them. Here I am, you know? And then he went to bed, and I just walked around Milwaukee for a couple hours, stopped in some bar and hung out with a bunch of, like, just Milwaukeeans. And it was just fun. It was just a real good night, real fun, very pure, good, just all about stand-up.
Nice. That's awesome. That's great. That is it. Sometimes it's the small victories in stand-up that
totally
count the most.
There's not a lot of giant victories. You know, if you're looking for giant victories in stand-up, you're going to be looking for a while.
Very disappointed. But you kind of talking about, you mentioned that some people kind of recognized you from some podcasts and stuff that you've been on, and now you're on a very popular podcast. And so do you find that now that you get recognized more because of being on that podcast? Has that helped with being more recognizable or about the same?
Yeah. I mean, if you go to the right places, like if I'm at a comedy festival in a city, then yeah, of course. But mm-hmm. no one's gonna. Maybe in Portland, sometimes I'll be like at a eating somewhere or something, and someone will. But it's helped with is it's a way to like get out, get your voice out, and have people anywhere can listen. So like now, when we go to cities, there's a handful of people that will go to these shows, which mm-hmm. is all I ever wanted. I don't. You know, if I can go to a city and get like 100 people to show up and I can do a show, that's amazing. And that's about like we went on tour a couple years ago and we were doing like 200 to 400 person venues. For the most part, we sold mm-hmm. like all tickets, and that's all I need. That was it was amazing to me. And then you do the show and you're with all these people and it's so much good. There's so much good energy flying around because we have complete control over the room. That's one of those things where I can be like, okay, this is how I want the show to go. This is how I want the lights. This is how I want the seats. I want the people let in. This is the music I want playing. You have control over all that. Mm-hmm. So you can make it that environment where no one's going to be shitty or anything. And it worked. It's fantastic. So yes, a podcast has definitely helped with that. And being recognized, it's happened maybe 10 times, but mm-hmm. it's really cool every time. I was in Seattle one. This is before we ever did it. This is from Doug Loves Movies, but I was in Seattle ordering a sandwich at this place called The Honey Hole. And the kid behind me, I just ordered my sandwich and he goes, are you Sean? And I was like, how do you know that? Because I was like, there's no way. And he goes, I've heard you on a podcast. It's cool. And I go, yeah, I guess my voice, huh? You didn't even need to see me. You just hear the voice. But yeah, this has only happened a few times, but it's very fun when it does.
That's awesome. And for the people listening, the podcast that he's on, the very popular podcast now, is All Fantasy Everything. If you're not listening to it, I highly recommend that you do listen to it. If you couldn't tell, I'm a fan. Thanks to Nathan Holtz. He's the one that got me on that train. And I love it.
Fun, talk about Sioux Falls all the time. So
yeah, I know. Yeah, you do. And the thing I love about it the most is that you can tell that the three of you are genuinely good friends. Like, the love that you guys have is what I love about it. Like, for each other. It's just like, this is great. It's like three best friends hanging out. And
yeah,
I love it.
It's tough, man. I agree. That's one of my favorite things. And thank you for noticing that. And we were wondering, like, with COVID, if it was going to... When this all started, nobody knew how it was going to shake out as far as podcasting, because one of the things that comes across, I feel like, in a show like that is the fact that we're in the same room and we're all having a good time. Mm-hmm. So thankfully, that has transitioned into doing it over Zoom pretty seamlessly.
I don't think you do. I think it's added to it a little bit.
Yeah, well, like, we're a year into this, so now this is almost like hanging out. I'm so used to this that it feels like you and I are chilling. Mm-hmm, I mean, I don't think we'd be operating any differently if we were in the same room, other than like we'd be bigger, you know?
Yep.
But it's like, I'm so used to this now, and I feel like everybody else is, that people can finally treat it. You don't have to like put on. I think a lot of people thought they had to like heighten things with Zoom, but you're like, it's the same. So it's thankfully we weathered the storm pretty well, and now like, David's in Denver, I'm in Portland, Ian's in LA. We're all the happiest we've ever been. It's going great. And then as soon as we can travel again, then fuck yeah, we'll be down there recording together. We'll do festivals and everything. So it'll definitely get back to where it was.
Excellent. That's great. Yeah. Yeah, I love it. I'll continue to listen to it. So the last thing that I like to do is I have a game that we play called Pick a Number. You're going to pick a number between 1 and 20, and then I'm going to ask you the corresponding question.
17.
If you could make a difference in the world, what would you be known for?
You know, I was just thinking about this. I don't want anyone to feel helpless. I've felt helpless so many times in my life, whether it's right now it's looking for a house. I just feel helpless. But not having any money, not mine has always been my money. Like not, I've just been broke so much of my life, but there's some people that like, they don't have medical care. They don't have dental care, anything. I just, that feeling of helplessness. I just would like everyone to know that they're okay. And I don't know what if there was like some sort of philanthropy, if I just was loaded and I could just do that, like some situation, be like, not focus on specific help, but rather like help individuals. So whatever this person needs, help them get it. Something, I guess something like that. So I just would want to take away that unsteady feeling that nobody deserves, because this is such a gift being alive and no one deserves to feel that way. So I would just, I don't know, every time I drive by someone on the freeway or walk past somebody who's living in a tent and I don't look at them and I just feel like such an asshole, because we're conditioned that way now to just walk by. And of course, what am I going to do? Stop and give them $100? I don't have enough to do that. So in a perfect world, that's what I would want to do, is just make everyone feel like they're going to be okay.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's a beautiful way to end this. I know you have a comedy album out. Where can people get that? And where can people go? Where do you want to direct people?
You can go, it's on a specialthing.com, Special Thing Records. It's called The Buck Starts Here. You know, Sean Cougar Mellon Jordan on Instagram. I always post about the podcast and I post skateboard clips all the time. If you like either one of those things, then follow me on Instagram. And if you're feeling saucy, just find like a venue in your hometown, like a theater or a comedy club that you don't want to go out of business because of all this, and like buy a t-shirt, you know, do what you can. Do that before you buy my album. Buy like a shirt from your favorite independent theater or whatever bar that you don't want to go under, all that stuff. Support local.
Absolutely. Well, this has been fantastic. Thank you, Sean.
Hey, thanks, man.
This has been brought to you by Dead and Mellow. Follow us on all your social media platforms and shop around at deadandmellow.com to see all of our stand-up, music, and podcast releases. Thank you, and God bless America.
All right, see you later.
See you.
Are we actually leaving or just it?
The Art of Bombing is a Blitzed Entertainment production, hosted and produced by me, Dan Bublitz Jr. The stand-up spotlight bumper was produced by Joe Nicola Music. The Art of Bombing theme music was written and performed by John Holt. All other music was used under Creative Commons licensing. All stand-up audio clips were used with permission from the comedians. You can help the podcast by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating, and a review. For previous episodes, merch, blogs, and more, please visit theartofbombingpod.com. And remember, stay safe so you can live to love.